This episode is brought to you by the European Coworking Assembly. We are everything Coworking Europe. If you head to the Coworking Assembly website, you can connect with our World Coworking, European Freelancers Week, Coworking Symposium, Coworking Library, and Coworking Tools.
Hi, good afternoon, and welcome to our panel. This panel is about inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility as a driver of growth in co-working spaces and their communities. My name is Janine van der Linden. I'm one of your moderators, and I'll introduce myself, and then I'll introduce my co-moderator, Ashley. I'm the founder and chief cook and bottle washer for De Kamer, a network of 8 co-working spaces in the Netherlands. I am also involved in the organization of the European Co-working Assembly, which in part supports this particular panel. And I am, in addition, I think, the longest sitting director of Open Co-working, which is a global nonprofit organization whose mission is to protect the and preserve the community property of the co-working movement. My co-moderator today is Ashley Proctor. Hi, Ashley. If there is anyone in co-working who really, honest to God, does not need an introduction, it is definitely Ashley Proctor, but I will do my best. Ashley Proctor is the initiator and power behind Creative Blueprint in Canada, where she combines the interests of many stakeholders from government, business, communities, collaborators, artistic communities, and creates custom solutions to the problems that address all of the needs of the stakeholders. The achievements of Ashley in her more than 15 years in co-working are way too numerous to mention. It would take up this entire hour, so I promise not to start. I will say that we are very proud of Ashley as the curator and initiator of Co-working Canada, which is the national co-working conference for Canada, and is also the initiator and catalyst for the Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Accessibility Project, which is a global project, and she's going to tell you more about that. But because of that project, this panel exists. Go, Ashley.
Thank you, Janine. I appreciate the introduction. Bonjour, bienvenue. It's an honor to be here today. If you're not yet familiar with the Coworking Idea Project, we are an international collective of coworking operators and associations, companies, consultants, and community organizers, and we're committed to making the coworking industry more inclusive, diverse, equitable, and accessible. We believe that by working collaboratively internationally, we can have a ripple effect throughout the industry, and we believe that each of our individual actions really matter. We each have the opportunity to make decisions in our businesses, in our organizations, and in our communities. And we also often have the platform and access to a larger network who we can influence by changing our behavior and by leading by example. Each month, the Idea Project issues a public challenge to the co-working industry to listen, to learn, to reflect, and to take an action, large or small, in an effort to make great change one step at a time. And you can find us and all of our past challenges at coworkingidea.org. So we have so many incredible co-working leaders, amazing human beings, and passionate advocates here with us today. So we'll dive right in to ensure that we have enough time to hear from everyone. So to start, I'll ask each of our panelists to share a quick introduction, and you'll get to know a little bit about our speakers and the fantastic organizations that they represent. Let's start with Pauline.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Ashley and Janine, for having me. I'm Pauline Roussel, co-founder of Coworkies. I'm actually joining you today from Berlin, Germany. And out of all things we do for co-working spaces and people gravitating around the industry, the most noticeable one recently is this coffee table book called Around the World in 250 Co-working Spaces, which is the outcome of 5 years of traveling around the world of co-working spaces. And inside the book, we share co-working stories from all over the world, people we've personally met, and we share their passion and how they ended up opening co-working spaces and how they navigated the pandemic and where they see each and every of their spaces going forward. That's a little bit about me.
Thanks, Pauline. Welcome, Birdie.
We said, well, look out for the mute button. And I was the first one to do it. Thank you very much for having me. My name is Birdie Van Wyk. I'm a workplace specialist for Millennial. If you're unfamiliar with Millennial, Millennial is a kind of collective of dynamic brands who kind of redefine modern for the 21st century by building more sustainable, a more kind of equitable, and a more beautiful future for everyone. On the subject of inclusivity and diversity, we have about 170 other people that work on that in our organization. I'm not the specialist in that. I'll be focusing more on specifically what you can do in your co-working space with regards to the environment, how we can redesign and create more inclusive environments and spaces.
Thank you. Welcome, Mike.
Hi, everyone. Excuse me. Hi. Good morning. I'm calling in from New York. My name is Mike LaRosa. I'm the Director of Channel Partnerships at Upflex. A lot of you might know Upflex as a booking platform. We've got about 5,500 locations in 72 countries around the world. But more than that, we actually provide enterprise companies a platform with how they can manage their workforce to not only book and search, but access these spaces. So I'm so grateful to be here today because we're working with large enterprise corporations that ever since COVID want to be able to provide access to a variety of co-working spaces to their employees. And we're helping them navigate that. And there's, you know, a lot of things that they need to learn from us. So glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome, Cecilia.
Hello, everyone. My name is Cecilia Tom. I wear many hats, but today I am wearing the hat of founder of MOB, stands for Makers of Barcelona. And we are one of the first large-scale maker and co-working community here in Barcelona. And I am here to contribute whatever I can today. So thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Welcome, Miro.
Hello, everyone. My name is Miroslav Miroslav, and I'm originally from Sofia, Bulgaria, that's Eastern Europe. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Office R&D, and we are building one of the leading co-working management platforms. We work with more than 1,000 customers that manage a few thousand buildings around the globe. I think we run space in like 100 countries. And we're also a team of 120 people, a very diverse crowd in a number of countries. So I'd love to talk about that. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome, Carmen.
Good afternoon, everyone. So my name is Carmen Lequan, and I currently work for Next. I actually worn many hats in the co-working industry. I've gone from being an operator in Paris to marrying a co-worker, and now being a specialist, an onboarding specialist in Nexus. So Nexus, as you know, is one of the leading platforms of co-working workplaces management. And my function is really to help customers, to be the front line of customers, helping them save time and resources, automating a lot of their actions, but also making their lives easier. So I'm here really to help them for existing places and new places, make their lives easier and support them on their everyday operations as a company, really. And Nexus is really known throughout the world as a cloud platform with over 90 countries that we cover and over 200,000 spaces. So in terms of an international background, in terms of like being a diverse team, our clients represent a lot of that, but also our internal team does too.
Thanks for being here. Welcome, Hector.
Hey, good morning from New Jersey, Jersey City, New Jersey. I'm Hector Colonis. I'm actually a South African Cypriot who got here via the UK. So lived in many places and also wore many hats like most folks in co-working. I actually landed up in co-working back in 2013. Do you remember that far back? There was a huge bail-in in Cyprus. I landed up launching co-working spaces by mistake in old ad agencies. And I was there that I realized that co-working communities had this huge power to change the neighborhoods that they were in. And I said, I'm going to be in this industry. I wanted to be involved with it. I followed that passion first to the UK and now over to the US. Over the, since 2013, I've supported well over 1,000 communities, both with launching, promoting, filling, running, and all the tech that goes behind the scenes. But today you'll find me leading the team at Syncaroo, which we work to connect all the pieces of the tech puzzle so that you can focus on the people and not on the tech connections. But you also find my newsletter called This Week in Coworking going out every Thursday morning, summarizing all the great news and celebrations from across our industry, because there's a lot happening that's just being ignored or forgotten by the public and the big media. So thanks for having me here. I'm excited to be involved with this conversation, and thank you for getting this onto the stage at Coworking Europe.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome, Shazia.
Hi, I'm Shazia. I'm the co-founder of Third Door. It's a co-working and nursery space that I launched back in 2010. My focus for the last 10, 12 years, 14 years even, has been working parents. How do we ensure that their needs are met in terms of how working patterns are changing? And going forward, my interest also lies very much in the intersectionality of the different groups. They've got working parents, but then how do we attract more people from underrepresented groups, such as, you know, I don't like using the word BAME, but within the BAME group, disabled, LGBT, and going, and that sort of is probably the reason why I'm here, because it's very much part of the conversation about diversity and inclusion within the co-working. That's just me in a nutshell.
Thanks for being here. Welcome, Natalie.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm Natalie Du Toit. I'm joining from South Africa. I know a few have said they're from South Africa. And I work for a company called Innocom in the digital marketing and communication space. And we're all working remotely as a team. I am also a motivational speaker, and I've also served on a number of South African, African and International Athletes Commissions and a board, with the role of actually setting up structures to share voice and ultimately including the main stakeholders of the athletes in these discussions and decisions which would ultimately grow sport. So sitting in the disabled side and the able-bodied side has been really interesting, and the conversations that come up with that and the different organizations. And just looking forward to today and growing within the co-working spaces.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome, Alex.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Alex Ahom. I'm from London, but I'm based in Hamburg, Germany. I'm a co-working founder, a future of work, diversity, inclusion, and workplace experience consultant. And I'm just happy to be here today. I think it's a great stage for us to discuss and really make some changes in the world of work. I'm super passionate about all of that. As I said, D&I, community building, and we're really focused on where we can take work and the workplace. So thanks for having me, and I'm looking forward to the discussion today.
Thank you. And I know we've taken some time here for introductions, but I think it's really important for our viewers to get to know all of these folks and know who that they can go to if they want to have further discussions offline and after this event. I also just want to acknowledge really quickly Bernie Mitchell, Jax, Tali Zelko, everyone who's helped behind the scenes to make this event happen today. So thank you to all of them who aren't on screen as well. So let's get to it. The first question: conversations around inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility seem to be happening much more frequently. And it's great to see this topic on the main stage at Coworking Europe this year. So are these questions, are these topics coming up in your own organizations and work? If yes, which ways are you working to make your organization or staff, your team, your events, your community, or even your region more diverse, inclusive, or accessible? And if not, then why do you think these conversations are not happening? And I'd like to open that up to anyone.
Can I just, I'm just going to jump in and and make a comment. I think for us, unfortunately, a lot of these issues, we don't deal with it unless there is a problem, unless there's a crisis. And then we're forced to kind of handled it. And by then, a lot of time, it's way too late. And we have had a couple of different experiences in that. And I have to say that, you know, I'm really grateful for the co-working community because, you know, from that experience, we realized that because co-working isn't a company per se, right? The co-workers aren't our employees. A lot of the kind of the framework that we know of, they don't really apply. And so with the co-working community, you know, the code of conduct and all of these different tools that have been created, we need a new framework. And so we were basing on those things. And so I would like to see that we are more intentional in terms of dealing, you know, handling equity, diversity, and inclusivity on a preparation basis and not as a reactive base. And so that, you know, I just wanted to kind of contribute in that sense.
I'd like to take from there. I'm really lucky that I get to work with a whole lot of co-working space operators, and I'm seeing the same things that Cecilia mentioned. A lot of folks were reactive to these situations, but over the last 12 to 13 months, we have seen more discussions happening about how do we prepare as space operators, as community builders, how do we implement code of conduct? How do we bring in best practices? How do we make sure our events are inclusive and are giving opportunity to people within our neighborhoods who may not feel represented in our spaces? So the conversations are definitely happening. We also host a weekly call over in Clubhouse, and these topics keep coming up, regardless of what the news is, but looking at how it affects, how, you know, huge funding rounds affect the people who use those spaces or the users' communities, and how does it, you know, connect and diverge people who want to engage with that community. So the conversations are definitely happening. There's still, of course, a lot of work to be done, but it is moving to that proactive instead of reactive stance. So I'm really glad to see that.
Yeah, probably I can also jump in with a little bit of a big organization. At 120 people, we actually get to implement a lot of these thinks as a proper framework and really streamline the process of educating people and build trainings because when you start scaling up, it's extremely easy to actually slip in the wrong direction. And as a founder, I assume most founders have a really good understanding of inclusion, diversity, and all that, and they can naturally limit all the negative impact of folks that don't necessarily understand the importance of this. However, when the organization starts to scale up, that can actually start losing ground, and it's important to set up the processes so that you ensure things run smoothly. So, for example, we introduce zero tolerance toward any improper behavior and all that. And also because we are in four different operating as team members in four different countries that are completely different, actually, like Eastern Europe and the States, for example, is a massive gap of understandings. What is diversity? What is inclusion? And what it actually means if you don't educate people, and we actually get to really spend time on that. It's a really dangerous position to be. So it's extremely important. And the sooner you do it in the life cycle of the organization, the better the chances to make it successfully, because otherwise it's a ticking bomb, and it's a huge bomb.
If I can also add my two cents to the discussion, for me, from what we see, because we are also quite connected to spaces all over the world, and when we discuss with them, I also feel that those four words, inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility, are like a topic of their own. Each of them are very different, and I feel certain co-working spaces also are sometimes very advanced in one of them, and not necessarily having the time or the resources to look at the three others. I believe, to echo what Miro was saying, that sometimes also there is a very big misunderstanding. What does it actually mean to be an inclusive space? What does it mean to be a diverse space or an accessible space? I think it's not very clear for everyone what stands behind those terms, because sometimes spaces or event organizers will tell you, oh, we are very diverse, we are very inclusive. And then you look at the panels and you look at what they do. And in reality, to the standards of what we expect, it's not exactly inclusive or diverse. So I think in general, and maybe one of the outcome of this conversation should be, should we set up standards to help people figure out where they stand on a scale of inclusion, diversity, accessibility or equity, for instance, just so people really get a sense of what we mean by that. And I think it's coming up in the conversation later, but there are great examples also that viewers right now or later can take inspiration from if they want to start somewhere with one of those topics or the four of them.
Yes, I have to strongly agree with Pauline in the need for a specific framework. But just like Miro, from a perspective of Nexus, which is a software system, we deal with so many operators. We also deal with so many events in the industry-wise that internally and both externally, we've tried our best for the past few years to implement things closer to a framework, but it's still missing. So for example, in terms of internal work that we've done, we've paid attention to workplace behavior, to the communication, how it's done between people from different backgrounds. And even, for example, in terms of our internal team, people that are making decisions, and I think this is one of the biggest things when you talk about diversity and inclusivity, is the people that are making decisions, the people on boards, it needs to show diversity. So this is one of the things that we've also focused on. We have women on board, we have people from different backgrounds making decisions that actually bring so much wealth and richness to what we are as a company. And then externally, because of course we've been 10 years in industry, we've actually had the ability to work with operators. So for example, in London, there's a great community, the Urban MBA. So we are involved in like recruiting and hiring people from local working spaces and actually attending these shows and showing that not just because we are a software and not so much an operator that we cannot do something, but I definitely agree with Pauline when she mentions the framework. And I think as a result from this whole conversation, if at the end, right, in a couple of months or a couple of years, we could come up with an excellent framework that of course will be a work in progress. I think that will be one of the biggest achievements we'll have as an industry.
Hi, I wanted to add to Pauline and Carmen's points. With co-working, a lot of it comes to design as well. So if we imagine that the default for most design in office spaces is men, white men, and then go from there. So for example, women, they react to temperatures differently to men. If anyone's read Invisible Women by, oh, I always get the name wrong, is it Carolina Cries Perez? But she talks a lot about the gender data gap and how officers aren't catered towards women. And then if we look at intersectionality and like, for example, working mums, have they got a space where they can go if they need to pump milk, or even if their baby's nearby, can they breastfeed? And then if then we're looking further into intersectionality and say we're looking at people who are religious, say Muslim, is there a prayer room for them that's clearly marked that they can go to without asking or saying, oh, can I, you know, what we don't want them to say is, oh, can we use that meeting room and go there? It should be clearly marked. They're just a few examples of where design comes in and how intersectionality works throughout that and just in those different layers. And that's just like a massive topic. I can go on and on, but I just wanted to give a few examples.
Go ahead.
Thanks. I just wanted to say that that's, I agree with that 100%. The question was around the conversation, right? And yes, it's great to see this topic on the main stage, but we can't fall into the trap of thinking that talk is enough. You know, in the D&I world, organizations, for example, spend a lot of time talking and maybe these days trying to move towards action on diversity. But diversity, you know, the first step, talk, diversity, it's not enough. You know, we must move forward to inclusion, equity, you know, equality, these kinds of things, sustainability. So as I said, I think it's great that we're talking about this on the main stage, but isn't it time to recognize that the talking must finish, and we must take responsibility. You know, so I want to ask everyone, when is it time for transparency? When is it time for accountability? You know, change and action is what we need to have, and not just talk. I think talk is the first step.
I think if maybe I can jump in here, and I'm not going to answer that question at all. I'm going to move that on. But ultimately, I think there's something that's really interesting and something that we've come across, and that is ultimately how tight do you make the rules and regulations? Or, you know, every culture is very, very different. So, for example, here in Africa, to try and get females on a stage as a director is really, really challenging. And sometimes we can really fight against the belief systems and cultures that are out there. So I think every culture, every region has something slightly different that they work towards, that they look at. And it's going to be very challenging to go across all the barriers. For example, I'm a disabled person. I'm an amputee. And if you had to give me a ramp, I would probably say things that I shouldn't really say. So as you can see, every disability is also very different in how you manage disability. What is equity? Is it equality? Is it equity? A lot of speakers have spoken about, the understanding of exactly what the terms mean. And I think in every region, they will mean something slightly different to the people that come into your workspaces. That, here in South Africa, I've gone into a number of spaces that are so different. Some you just walk in, order a cup of coffee and you sit down. Some are more controlled, and every workspace is completely different. So I think it's also being able to listen to the other person or the people that are actually coming in, your clients, and understanding what it is, what is the culture that you'd like to bring about. And maybe if I could put it out there that, the group does, sit together and put together a few ideas of what can be done or what shouldn't be done or what should be the right words.
Well, I think that gives us an excellent transition to our second question. I think that because the questions always come up immediately, we have been doing at the European Co-working Assembly these kinds of events and discussions for some time, and this is where the conversation goes. It goes to the how. First, we talk about the what, we talk about the why, and we talk about the how. And so, how do you measure the impact or the progress or the status of your co-working space in terms of inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility? And can any of you share an example of real success in your region, in your organization?
So maybe I can jump in and just, I don't work in a co-working space, but we have really seen the positive nature of actually speaking with people that are part of your stakeholders. Having calls or taking a questionnaire or going around and, spending a minute or 2 minutes asking. And for example, in our case, it was about classification in sport, for example. And, everyone was complaining that it's unfair and that there are some disabilities that are in classes that shouldn't be, et cetera. So I think it's to include everyone in the conversation in some shape or form, that it's not always about the top-down approach, but it's about the bottom-up and bringing together the thoughts and ideas. And ultimately, getting everybody on board and taking them on that journey as well, so that they also understand that you care and that you want them to have the best experience possible.
Just to add on what Natalie was saying, I also feel sometimes the topic is so important and so big that for a lot of operators, it's a little bit stressful to start tackling this issue. So I would also say that you can start as small as you can. There are no big or small actions. Actually, every single action counts if you want to start somewhere. And I think reaching out to communities like European Co-working Assembly or like regional communities like, I don't know, Co-working Deutschland or Switzerland, and ask them to highlight or direct you to co-working spaces who have already worked that work and who can maybe mentor you or guide you somehow somewhere is already a good first step if you're interested in going into one of those directions and understand how you can do that. But I would also like to point out that you shouldn't do it for the wrong reasons, because sometimes I feel co-working spaces would use it as a marketing tool. And I think this is not okay. You have to do it because you believe in it and not because you want to use it. You can, of course, be proud of yourself and proud that you're doing it. But I think afterwards using it just because it's marketing, but you don't really believe in it. For me, this is also where I want to like kind of draw a line that you have to really understand where you want to stand on this.
Yes. Hannah Miller and Miller Knoll, we do, I think, almost 50 quarterly reports on inclusivity, which we share globally. If you're interested, you can just Google A Better World and Herman Miller, and it'll give you some insights, and there's some reports that we constantly publish. There's also some ideas on how to be more equitable, more inclusive. It'll share all these information, even things like committing some of your spend into kind of diverse groups, making sure that you're, if you have money to spend, if you're going to go get some resources, make sure that it goes to women-owned organizations or diverse-owned business organizations. So there's loads of these ideas. If you just go for the Google, try and Google it, there's some great ideas online that we share.
I'd also just like to add here for some folks who are looking for challenges that they can take on the coworkingidea.org website. Each month there's a new challenge. And if you're interested, for example, in how to make your space more accessible, Ivana Poussier and David O'Koyman created a challenge this year with a checklist to go through your space and look at all these different elements. And obviously it doesn't touch on everything, but each month there is another challenge and checklist that you can use as at least a starting point for conversation and taking action to measure your impact as well.
I mean, if I may, I'd like to share a very successful case that we have managed to create. So a couple of years ago, we have identified that there is a lack of women in tech, especially in co-working spaces. And so this was in 2017. We were in a conference where, you know, out of the 28 speakers, there were 26 of them were men. And so with that conversation in mind, with one of my former employee, now my co-founder, we decided to launch a kind of a boot camp for women to drive more women in the tech space. And so growing out of the community, we were running these boot camps inside the co-working that we had, and now it has spun off into its own startup, and now we're one of the largest women in tech community in all of Europe, and we are training more than 200 women per year in machine learning and data analytics, and launching Quantum very soon, and so we're super happy about this particular initiative.
Thank you for that. I'm wondering along the same lines if anyone might have an example of something tangible that workspace operators could do to make their communities more diverse or inclusive. What small or specific action might folks take, something they could do today, in addition to checking out the challenges that we've issued?
Well, again, just to give a very basic example, we spoke previously about the endless talking about these issues. And I was recently in a series of meetings where an organization wanted to give their female members a better work experience. And they came to me because they had kind of almost hit a wall in how they could kind of make things better. And can you imagine that this five-person team that was put together to try to make the lives of women, that their female members better in their spaces, this five-person team, they were all men. Yeah, so it was kind of ridiculous to me. They felt that they were all very open-minded. There was a woman on the team before, but they were all open-minded, and they felt it wasn't a problem. But that is the issue. You have people who don't believe they're the problem, talking about a topic that they don't have an experience in. They don't have skin in the game. So of course, I suggested wholesale changes to the team, and we brought in some other changes as well. For example, in meetings where oftentimes you have meetings and men are taking over the stage, talking over other people or talking a lot, asking more questions. And one of the things I suggested was that we can't have kind of two men speak back to back. There has to be for example, at the time, this is a while back now, but have different speakers or different genders speak, not just only men only put their hand up. So we had to kind of bring in, enforce the case that we had to make a change, because without that, it happened where men were the only ones talking in these events, or they were talking for a long time, as I am now. But the example, as I said, is we had to make changes that people didn't always find comfortable, but in the end, it made behaviors shift.
I've got something else to just add around actual environments and spaces. When we've been looking at inclusive design since 2014, and what happens is people design for most people, for the middle group, and then kind of try and accommodate the edges. But when we're looking at inclusive design, it's actually designing for the edges, which means everyone gets a fantastic, wonderful experience. And when we try and do that, we try and make sure that we don't get hung up on just one group, because it's very easy to just think of just one group and then think you're doing inclusive design, but you're just thinking of one group, and the groups are many and vast. So we've got like three key guidelines, three kind of lenses that we follow. The first one is like beyond barrier free, where we look at spaces that eliminate real or actually perceived barriers of successful use. Basic things like that you can do it in these environments, provide generous circulation space, preventing unexpected kind of hazards, kind of intuitive kind of mobility, and variety and choice in these environments is absolutely key. If you really want to create a wonderful kind of good experience, variety of spaces where you can choose the temperature, you can choose how much stimulus there is, this, how much light there is, how much color, how much noise, how much privacy you can have, you know, designing the surroundings, the furnishings, the tools to ensure that you have a neutral body position and it's easy to reach wherever you go. Movable elements, make sure that if you have movable elements, that they're very easy to kind of move and easy to control. The other thing that we talk about is, you know, we actually feel before we think. So our senses subconsciously kind of read the world around us. So when we're looking at environments, we want products that are clearly communicate their kind of their function and the direction that they're pointing and their purpose. We shouldn't have to figure out what's happening in that space. It should absolutely be automatic for us to figure out, this is exactly what the purpose is for. This is how I can use it through colors, through textiles, through the textures that we actually use within these environments and these spaces. And sometimes it could be something as simple. In your co-working space right now, you might have a beautiful standing height table. And guess what? If there's no privacy screen below it, if you've got a dress, you can't actually use that environment. So we got quite a few more of these things that we talk about. There's great examples of wonderful inclusive design. Even HOK, the architectural practice, have got some wonderful things, free guides around kind of designing for neurodiversity. But the more variety and choice, and really good variety and really good choices that we create, the easier and more accessible we make it for a larger group of people to use your own environment.
Just to highlight.
Go for it.
Just to highlight something that Brandy said in terms of accessibility of physical space. Think of your website. Think of the images that you put on a website. Think how easy it is to access certain things like a search button, for example. As a platform, for example, the color scheme that we use, the directions that we put in place of the platform correspond to accessibility. Like how easy for someone that has a huge background in technology to someone that is just opening a co-working space and has no idea but needs help, how do they interact with your system? When they look at your website, can they see diversity? For example, your panel of decision makers, for example, in our company, every single department has a percentage of diversity from women, from different people from different backgrounds, from different sexuality, from different abilities, for example. So I believe change first is done internally, then shown externally. So the co-working space itself, the website, how close the toilet is to people, for example, physically, and also web-orientated changes that show the first line, the front line, which will then replicate into the users, into the people that work for you, into the people that use your products and services. So let's think of change and diversity internally first. And automatically, I promise you, that will attract people. If I see a website that talks about, a co-working space talks about sustainability or encourages diversity, I'm very much more inclined to want to join this space as a person. If I see someone that looks like me on the decision board or just the pictures of the co-working rooms, I feel much more welcome. So just even little twitches here and there in space, like Brennan was saying, but also your websites can make a huge difference.
Can I just echo also what you guys were saying with an example? Basically, when we were in Paris, we met a co-working space there who made inclusion their core focus, but inclusion through interior design. And what they were doing, which was very interesting, is that they were each and every new member that were coming through the space. You were meeting with like an ergotherapist, so someone who looks at your, how tall are you, what's like your height. And then depending on who you are, because for instance, I'm rather petite, so the regular size chairs and desks, they don't fit me. Do you say ergotherapist? I don't know in English, I'm sorry, but like those people who look at your body and everything, they were analyzing what you are and how you work and how you stand. And based on that, they were recommending you the right chair, the right table. And I just, because Bertie, you were talking about feeling, and just talking with that person, I felt very included into the community right away. I was like, wow, they care for me. Like they care for my well-being enough to actually don't go for the traditional chair or the regular desk. They actually say, hey, you're rather petite, come here. And they were doing the same through technology. And maybe here Mike and Hector have some things to add to that. But I also feel that good use of technology, or even Miro and Carmen through your platforms. But I feel that technology also in a way can make people feel way more included, and it feels more inclusive in a certain way, depending on how operators can use it. Because sometimes when you use your co-working software, there are many functionalities, but how can you look at them in a way that actually you make your community feel included and you make your community feel connected to it? So yeah, that was my two cents on that. Thanks, Bertie, for the reminder of that great story.
I would love to visit that space just to find out what chair I'm supposed to be using, because I have no idea, to be honest.
I also didn't know. But you know what? They recommended me some sort of like bow, which is, I think, from Kinarps or something. And it was like for the balance. And it was absolutely incredible. And the co-working space in question, for people interested, is called Quirk, Kwerk. So that's that.
When I'm there, I'm definitely going to check that out. So yeah, from a tech perspective, one of the things that I've noticed is using a very motivationally postery kind of way. If you keep doing what you've always done, you're always going to get what you've always got. So if you keep marketing through the same channels and partnering with the same brokers, the same distribution channels, you're going to keep reaching the same people you've always reached. So I'm really excited to see spaces who are looking at new ways to reach into local communities or local community hubs that don't traditionally use co-working or haven't engaged with co-working spaces much in the past, and really creating and starting those conversations. That's kind of where a lot of the work we're doing with Syncaroo is making sure that people can reach new things and new platforms and new distribution channels really, really easily and efficiently. But stepping away from tech just for a second, if you allow me, there's three notable examples of intentionality that I've seen that I've loved. The one is, you know, folks who are still under mask mandates using masks with kind of see-through visors, allowing people hard of hearing or people who need to lip read that ability of being able to communicate even from behind a mask. Small thing, huge feeling of being included and being accepted and welcomed in a space. A second is hygiene products. Are they only in one set of bathrooms or in every bathroom? Are you even supplying hygiene products for your members without them having to ask? the same thing goes right now for baby changing tables. Are they only in your female toilets or are they in all toilets? It's a big challenge I faced recently going around with the pram is finding places that only my wife could change the kit, which is a really strange thing to think about, but you know, it definitely makes people feel more included. And yeah, those are just some great examples that I've seen that are actionable and tangible, and they're pretty simple to implement, but they go a long way to make people feel that you've taken those steps to be more welcoming.
I think if maybe I can add on to the conversation that's going at the moment, and that is, I think also it's up to different age groups. So for example, sometimes you actually want to meet other businesses and you want to talk to people, and you know, being accessible to be able to do that, having an opportunity to communicate in a safe environment, obviously. But ultimately, you know, there are some, you know, newly children, those that have just come out of school, that are wanting to jump into business. They want to meet people. They want to, you know, find out what's happening. And I must admit that I find it difficult to work from home. So for example, I would go to a workspace. Sometimes I just want to be quiet. Sometimes I want to meet people and see what they're doing. You know, what can we take away from it or implement into what we're doing? And I think that is something that has been really important. And so choosing your space based on what you would like to achieve for the day has also been really important for me. And I think, you know, as the generations move on and as the, what I would call them, youngsters come up and join the working field, and as hybridized style of work, you know, moves on and, you know, people start working from home more and moving over to workspaces more, I think it's really important to also consider that. And, you know, so what is accessibility? It can be within the space, but it can also be being accessible to different generations that come to your space.
Yeah, I think that's right. So again, Natalie has, it's a genius you have, Natalie, has given us a terrific transition into the last question for today, which is sort of the meat of this seminar, because we've worked our way through, you know, what is inclusion? How do we go about it? What can we do? How can we measure it? And so here's the meat of the question. Many companies focus primarily on growth and profit, particularly large ones, but some of them are starting to wake up to expanding markets, the benefits of that. Engaging and providing services to new and a more diverse set of members. So can you make for me a financial case for diversity and inclusion? And we're going to start with Mike.
Yes, for sure you can make the case. So it's really fascinating. I've worn a couple, many different hats in the co-working world, right? Recently, I've been engaging with kind of commercial real estate, large enterprise organizations. And just a few weeks ago, I was at like the first, you know, in-person conference, everyone's back. And the number one question or the topic was about accessibility. And everyone's like, mind was kind of like blown. Like it was like something new that they were kind of, you know, talking about, not so much within their own space, but accessibility for where everyone, all of their employees want to work, which is, guess what, not in the office, right? And so this is why I think it's so fascinating that really co-working's time has come. A lot of these people on the screen with me are dear friends, but like we're early adopters, right? We've been beating this drum forever. Corporate America now knows that they have to follow certain kind of minimums that their employees, but more importantly, their customers expect of them. And that's, you know, we see that in developing these different DEI initiatives. But, you know, I respect what Pauline said. You have to be respectful for marketing. You don't want to lead your marketing with the fact that you do these things. But a little kind of shameless plug to, like, you know, Hector, you want to make sure that when you do something, it's properly acknowledged, right? And so when, you know, spaces have all these different listing platforms, you know, where all these companies are turning to use to funnel their employees through, if your profile is not properly updated on every single listing profile, or if you don't have these things, and I'm kind of speaking to the folks at Nexus and Office R&D, there's different things that you can add to your your software, where the space operators can acknowledge what type of locations they have, what type of amenities they provide. Because we're seeing that employees, it's really fascinating, they're searching for space for far different types of reasons than we ever expected. They're not just picking a space because they want a sales meeting for 10, or you know, maybe they want to pick a space for a certain meeting that's in a female-focused co-working space. Or maybe they want to have a space where they know that, you know, in the US, I think there's a lot more buildings that might have accessibility built in, but I know not everywhere in the world has like ADA mandates, right? So if you're trying to book a meeting, you need to make sure that, you know, to Natalie's point, you know, we've had a conference, actually, there was a co-working conference that wasn't accessible. And I remember attendees had to carry someone in a wheelchair up 2 flights of stairs, right? Because it wasn't noted on the conference site and no one even thought to ask that question. And so, you know, it's one of those things where it's really important that you do it, but then it's how do you not just market it, but the business case is very simple. If you don't have some type of, you know, element that provides a welcoming, safe space, you're not going to be considered. And we all know that like the quickest way to lose business is not to be on that list. And so it's doing good by doing well. Like you're not doing it for the business intentions. You're doing it because it's right, but it also helps bring your space to someone, you know, considering. Sorry, I hope I didn't run on.
just on that, I just want to say, I think it might be slightly dangerous to build a financial case for inclusiveness, and just in my view, you know, inclusive design is already good design and it creates a great experience for everyone. But when you start building a financial case for it and potentially not hitting it, then people might even lose interest. I think it's a very, very difficult thing. It's a great thing. It creates a better experience for everyone. That is kind of the focus point for me, the financial case. I think it's a little bit difficult because I pretty much think, and I work with massive corporates all around the world, co-working is purely part of the answer of creating an equitable experience for everyone. So for me, that should be a really big focus, specifically because co-working is an answer for a lot of corporates to creating a better equitable experience for their employees.
Well, to wind it up, because we're running out of time, I have to say that I have a somewhat different perspective. And I think at this moment in time, we can no longer make a financial case for non-inclusive business. We can no longer make a case for non-equitable business, non-diverse business, non-accessible business. We can't maintain this model. We have real pressing crisis level concerns by excluding, let's face it, add up all the marginalized folks, and we are excluding the majority of working people around us. By doing that, we deprive ourselves of their ideas, their resources, their initiative, their innovative approaches, and we can't afford to do it the other way anymore. So I guess that is my 2 cents worth for this panel. And I think in winding up, I think everybody is in agreement that our biggest takeaway is be intentional. Our second biggest takeaway is it's good to be proactive. And our third biggest takeaway is we need to do this together. As all of you know, actually, the elephant in the room, I'll name it, European Co-working Assembly has been working for some years. I think almost everyone on this panel has in some way been involved in that project, in the project of developing a workbook for co-working spaces to provide that framework for what you need to look at and how you need to approach taking your co-working community into your local community and making it more inclusive, diverse, equitable, and accessible. So, and I think that's it. Ashley, do we have any other items that I skipped?
Well, I'd just like to invite everyone to join us back at coworkingidea.org for more conversations. And we'll be doing further challenges and inviting these panelists and others to join us to help co-facilitate challenges in the new year. And if you're interested in joining that conversation, we meet monthly. You can participate as an organizer, as a sponsor, as a co-facilitator, as someone who issues challenges, or who's someone who simply takes them each month and uses them to make improvements in your own community. So thank you all for being here today. I hope you will reach out after this panel to many of our fantastic speakers and guests in the industry for more knowledge, and that you'll join us for future events. Thanks for watching.